Live from the College of Communication, Arts, and Sciences at Michigan State University, it is now time to go beyond the X's and the O's with WKAR's current sports.
You want to go after an athlete, one of my athletes, come after me. I'm a man. I'm 40.
My style is impetuous. My defense is impregnable.
Well, I'm the best corner in the game. When you try me with a sorry receiver like Crabtree, that's the result you're going to get.
Yes, did I express to them I was mad? I was furious. Just furious.
I know my wife will at least shut fake one time.
We're talking about practice, not a game.
And I told our players, you need to be more like a dog. We don't need a bunch of cats in here. Yeah, looking in the mirror. But I look good. I got my extra bands on. I got my other shoes on. Be a dog. We don't need no meows. We don't need no cats.
Here's your host, L. Martin.
What is up, beautiful people? That's right, another day, another dollar, and another day in which you are tuned into WKAR's current sports, coming to you live here on WKAR AM 870, 105.1 FM. That's right, as you just heard my man Chayo say, I am your host, Al Martin, coming to you on this July 12th, 2018. It's Thursday. Friday is almost here. And I cringe every time I say this around Thursday and Friday when the weekend is near, right? Because I feel like these past few weeks have just been flying by. And the summertime is just on full throttle right now. And pretty soon, it's going to whiz on by. I'm just trying to soak up as much sun and 80-degree weather I can. All right, I really hope you guys are having a great summer out there and a great week at that, right? We plan on brightening up your week even more, as we customarily do each and every weekday here at 1 p.m. at WKAR, with a sizzling hot hour of sports talk coming right your way. A lot to get to. This has been one busy summer at that, right? On today's current sports, we will be talking about the college football playoff and whether or not the format needs to be changed. Again, this is a long-running conversation that has been had since the college football playoff has taken over in comparison to the old BCS format, right? Is four teams enough? Should it be expanded? Well, this is a conversation that was really sparked by our current sports production crew behind the glass after a show earlier this week, some falling on the end that the college football playoff needs to be changed, while we have one individual that says, no, leave it as it is. So we'll dive into that conversation. That should be a fun one. I can see both sides, but I'm going to take a hard stance on it today. All right, you don't want to miss that combo. It's Thursday, and as you know, each and every Thursday here on Current Sports, we love to educate you all in the world of sports history, as we hop into our current sports time machine to take a look at exactly what happened on this particular date in sports history. We call it Throwback Thursday. But before we get to all of that, our first topic of discussion today will be a tribute to now the late Daryl Rogers, who was an ex-Detroit Lions head football coach and head coach of course, the Michigan State football team back in the 70s. Daryl Rogers sadly has passed away. And I'll kind of take you through his remarkable coaching career. And I tell you what, you talk about animated and entertaining. Daryl Rogers was certainly that throughout his coaching career. But Daryl Rogers sadly passing away at the age of 83. I'll have more on that when it comes to our headliners in just a moment. So, again, I'm curious, many of our current sports listeners out there who are Michigan State, longtime Michigan State football fans, longtime Detroit Lions fans, I'm curious to get your thoughts. And maybe you have a memory or three on Daryl Rogers. Call in 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527 is the number to dial up. You can also join us on social media at facebook.com/WKAR News and comment below the live stream there. And you can even join the conversation on Twitter at Al Martin, WKAR, is my Twitter handle, or tweet the show at WKAR underscore sports. So, without further ado, here are your current sports quick hit headliners. Right, and as I just mentioned, again, former Michigan State and Detroit Lions head coach Daryl Rogers died yesterday morning at the age of 83. He coached the Spartans from 1976 to 1979 and won the Big Ten championship for Michigan State back in 1978. He went on to coach the Detroit Lions from 1985 to 1988. Many tributes coming in. Many statements being released. Many of those I read yesterday on social media. Detroit Lions owner Martha Firestone Ford said in a statement released by the Lions, quote, "We are deeply saddened to learn of the passing of Daryl. On behalf of me, my family, and the entire Detroit Lions organization, I would like to extend our sincere sympathy to his wife, Marsha, and to the Rogers family." Again, that statement coming from Detroit Lions owner Martha Firestone Ford, and also, of course, head coach of the Michigan State football team, Mark D'Antonio, also released a statement yesterday saying, quote, "Our thoughts and prayers go out to Daryl Rogers and his family at this most difficult time. Coach Rogers won the 1978 Big Ten championship at Michigan State and was, in many ways, an offensive pioneer in college football. I was honored to have had the opportunity to talk to him a number of times throughout my time here, and he was always very supportive. He loved Michigan State and will forever be a Spartan." Again, Rogers coaching at Michigan State from 76 to 79. He posted a 24-18-2 record for the green and white. Also, he coached three first-team All-Americans at Michigan State, including wide receiver Kirk Gibson, tight end Mark Brammer, and punter Ray Statuewitz. We'll have more on the passing of Daryl Rogers in just a moment. And again, we encourage all of you Michigan State football fans out there or Detroit Lions fans out there to call in or comment below our live stream at facebook.com/WKARnews with your memories of the late Daryl Rogers. Again, the phone number to call is 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527. All right, Moneyball resumes tonight at the Aim High Sports Complex out in Diamonddale, Michigan. This is what the slate looks like tonight starting at 6 p.m. You've got three games, an hour each. At 6 p.m., Team Definition rocking the blue will take on Team Showtime in the gold. At 7 p.m., Team Splatter in the black will take on Team Glory in the red at 7. Team Vintage in the green will take on Team Quicksilver in the gray to end tonight's slate. That tip time scheduled for 8 p.m. When it comes to the standings, Team Splatter is a perfect 4-0. Then you have four teams actually tied for second at 2-2 in Team Definition, Team Glory, Team Quicksilver, and Team Showtime. And Team Vintage is still looking for a win. Team Vintage rocking the green is 0-4 in this year's Moneyball. When it comes to league leaders, I guess you could say, for each team, Team Vintage, 0-4, remind you, is being led by Nick Ward, actually, though, who is averaging 44 points per game. My goodness. Team Quicksilver in the gray being led by Gabe Brown. He's averaging 27 points per game. Josh Langford is spearheading Team Splatter in the black, averaging 30.7 points per game. Also 2 assists and almost 4 rebounds. And get this, Lou Rawls Tum Tum Nairn Jr., now former Michigan State men's basketball player, he is leading Team Glory in the red, averaging 19 points per game, 6 assists per game, and 6 rebounds per game. Team Definition is being led by Kenny Goins, 25.5 points per game for him, and Team Showtime in the gold is being led by the X-Man, Xavier Tillman, 18 points per game, 1.7 assists per game and 7 rebounds per game. So again, Moneyball Pro-Am Summer League action getting underway tonight at 6 p.m. at the Aim High Sports Complex in Diamondale, Michigan. In a tournament setting, the wins don't have to be pretty. They just have to be wins, right? In the Las Vegas Summer League in the NBA, the Detroit Pistons needed a win, pretty or otherwise, to move on. After a 1-2 mark in the prelim rounds, the Pistons had the 25th seed and had a tough road in the first playoff round with a matchup against the 8th seeded Minnesota Timberwolves. In the first half, the Pistons built a 19-point lead and looked to be on their way to a lopsided win. Then it got ugly. They gave up the lead but held on in the final minute, taking a 64-59 dub over Minnesota. On Wednesday night at Cox Pavilion, the Pistons move on to face the 24th-seeded Chicago Bulls in the next round of the 30-team tourney. All right, and a quick update when it comes to the Big Three that will be taking place at Little Caesars Arena this weekend. Detroit Pistons legend Chauncey Billups will not play when the Big Three tips at LCA. However, he will be in attendance when Ice Cube's Professional 3-on-3 League plays a 4-game slate downtown Detroit beginning at 6 p.m. on Friday. Billups said, quote, "I'm not going to be able to play. I had surgery on my knee a few months back, and I'm just trying to get it right and strong. I'm disappointed that I won't be able to play. I beg Cube and those guys to put Detroit on the list, so it sucks that I won't be able to play, but I'll be there enjoying the festivities." All right, the Detroit Tigers debit card must have gotten declined at the store because they simply cannot buy a win right now. Their lack of offense has made it that much harder for their pitching crew to save them. C.J. Cron hammered a 2-0 pitch from Jordan Zimmermann into the left center field stands for a 3-run homer in the 7th inning, leading the Tampa Bay Rays to a 4-2 dub over the Tigers yesterday. The Rays swept the 3-game series at Tropicana Field and sent the Tigers to their 18th loss in the last 22 games. Yeah, that homer actually lifted the Rays to their 5th straight win, and 5 pitchers held the opponent to 2 runs or fewer for the 12th time in the Rays' past 15 home games, in which they are 14-1. The Tigers, who struck out 14 times against 5 Tampa Bay pitchers, have lost 4 straight. Next up will be a 3-game set in Houston, as the Tigers will face the AL West-leading Houston Astros. That series will kick off tomorrow night. All right, Money Mantha is staying in Detroit. One of the younger stars of the Detroit Red Wings, Anthony Mantha, is getting a contract extension for 2 years with a cap hit at $3.3 million. Mantha has 43 goals and 87 points in 150 career games and doesn't believe his work is even close to being done. This is what Mantha had to say. Quote, "You want to play playoff hockey. You want to be winning. You want to have fun with a group of guys around the dressing room, with the coaching staff, and even the owners. We need to step it up next year. We want to have fun while winning, and that's going to be our main goal." All right, the football season isn't here yet, but the preseason predictions in the world of college football are in for the Dodd Trophy, a.k.a. the College Football Coach of the Year honor. And shocker, Mark D'Antonio of Michigan State is not on it, but U of M's Jim Harbaugh, was listed as one of the favorites being put on the watch list for this accomplishment. Other Big Ten coaches on the watch list are Wisconsin's Paul Christ, Penn State's James Franklin, and Ohio State's Urban Meyer. Christ was a finalist for the award last year. Ian Hawley, the disrespect continues. I kind of cringed when I read this story this morning. It just never stops. Jim Harbaugh.
Are you even surprised?
I'm not. But it never ceases to irk me. Every time I read something where Jim Harbaugh is on the watch list or Jim Harbaugh is being praised as a head coach of U of M, I'm sitting there saying, what have you done for that school?
But it just makes it that much more sweet when they go 8-5.
Yeah, right. Yeah, we'll see. Yeah,
if that.
Yeah, we'll definitely see, right? All right, well, We'll go behind the glass right now. The World Cup, I spent the better half of my afternoon. I was completely unproductive from like 2 to 4 yesterday afternoon because I was in my office trying to do work, trying to make some calls, book some guests. But my eyes were glued to what was happening out in Russia, in the England and Croatia semifinal. Entertaining, I must say. Entertaining. And right now we go behind the glass for a World Cup update by current sports PA Connor Mathis. Connor, I'm sure you were also glued to that match yesterday.
Yeah, I actually had to do something for my apartment, and I kept on my new apartment, so I kept on pushing it back to right. make sure I didn't miss anything. But anyway,
yeah.
After an exciting 2-1 victory over England, Croatia will advance to its first ever World Cup final after a grueling knockout stage that saw them become the first team since, ironically, England in the 1990 World Cup to have 3 straight games go to extra time. Here is a soundbite of the Croatian winning goal.
Play to Sandwalker, able to stab it up in the air. Trippy around, duel by Perisic. Mandzukic got there and scores! Croatia takes the lead. Croatia, the second smallest nation in history to make a World Cup final.
All right. And Croatia's opponent in the World Cup final will be France. And France will be making their third appearance in the final, with previous appearances coming in 1998 and 2006. Now, France is 1-1 in World Cup finals and leads the all-time series with Croatia at 3 wins, 0 losses, and 2 ties. Now, the next World Cup match will not be the final. It will, in fact, be the third/fourth place game between Belgium and England, and that will happen Saturday at 10 a.m. The final will take place on Sunday at 11 a.m., with France being the current favorite.
All right. Thanks a lot, Connor. I'm looking forward to Sunday's match. And again, we'll get Brooks Lambeer back on the show. He is our in-house soccer expert. Of course, Brooks is an assistant coach for Lawrence Tech University soccer program, as well as a regional scout for the Portland Timbers. And I also want to note, coming out of Wimbledon, Serena Williams has rolled into the Wimbledon final. How about this? A relatively routine 6-2, 6-4 semifinal victory over 13th-seeded Julia Georges of Germany today put Williams in her 10th final at the All England Club and moved her closer to a 24th Grand Slam title, which would equal Margaret Court's record. Absolutely amazing. Didn't this remarkable woman just have a baby? And she's right back on it, dominating in the world of tennis. Hats off to Serena Williams. All right, that wraps up your current sports quick hit headliners. Let's keep it pushing.
And I think it's a great tribute to you, because I think you were the guy that caused it.
I don't know. I think it's just a product of the times when it gets right down to it. I think people in the Big Ten would just happen to make some changes, and I happen to be the first one. Whereas the Jim Young is now coming in for Purdue, and everybody else is coming in. So the Big Ten throws the football so much more than it did 3 years ago, and now we're seeing a heck of a lot of different coverages, so it's a lot different football game.
Can you ever remember the time when 3 of the top 10 passers in the country were from the Big Ten?
Well, I think sometimes the people fail to realize that the Big Ten area originated the forward pass. Newt Rockne at Notre Dame, they were the first one to throw the ball, so it started in the Midwest, and then it creeped to the Southwest, and then it went to the far West. And it's nice to have it back in the Midwest again, because I think it's an exciting part of the football game.
Darrell, it's been, 4 years now since Michigan State has been on television, 1975. I know it's been a long way. What's been the reaction of your players in being on national TV?
Well, I think they're all excited. Unfortunately, you know, it's a the extracurricular activities on the outside makes it exciting because they've seen what it is and how important it is. And they want to do a good job. And I think our coaching staff, you know, we've always said we can't wait for the cameraman to get on sideline. We'll kiss him.
Daryl Rogers, that new shaking Spartan Nation and, of course, fans of the Detroit Lions yesterday, as news broke that Daryl Rogers, who led the Spartans to the 1978 Big Ten Championship, sadly passed away. He was 83 years old. I read the statement coming from head coach Mark D'Antonio yesterday. He released that to the public, saying our thoughts and prayers go out to Daryl Rogers and his family at this most difficult time. Coach Rogers won the 1978 Big Ten Championship at Michigan State and was in many ways an offensive pioneer in college football. I was honored to have had the opportunity to talk to him a number of times throughout my time here, and he was always very supportive. He loved Michigan State and will forever be a Spartan. And, you know, I had to do some research on Daryl Rogers because I wasn't too familiar with him. You know, when I heard this news come down yesterday, I had to, I immediately began going into the archives and doing some research on the Michigan State Athletics website. And Daryl Rogers was really an innovator in the world of college football. I mean, you heard a snippet from him there talking about how really the game began to change. And Daryl Rogers was a pioneer in allowing the quarterback to let it rip down the field, use his arm and move the chains. Because prior to that, especially in Big Ten football, it was more of a ground and pound game. But, you know, Rogers was known here at Michigan State University as an offensive innovator, a pass-happy coach. And, you know, I was reading the different tributes come in, and so many talked about how he was really one of the first coaches in college football to, again, allow the quarterback to use his arm to make things happen. So, again, he coached at Michigan State for, 3 years, 1976 to 1979. He then left for Arizona State before the 1980 season, and then he coached the Detroit Lions for 3 years, from 1985 to 1988. That was his only stint in the NFL. He also had college stints at Fresno State, where he coached from 1969 to 1972, and San Jose State from 1973 to 75. And he finished 24-18-2 at MSU after being replaced by Dennis Stoltz, who left the program on probation, actually, for recruiting violations. But, you know, what's also remarkable when diving into the archives and looking at the impact that Daryl Rogers had here in East Lansing, get this, you know, that offense, that fun offense, that pass-happy offense that Rogers implemented back in Spartan Stadium, MSU's average attendance before Rogers' arrival, get this, had actually dipped below 57,000 in East Lansing. In 1978, attendance rose to 71,142, which at the time was the second highest average in Michigan State University history. So that fun, pass-happy offense that Rogers implemented when he came to Michigan State, I mean, fans instantly became intrigued, began to buy tickets, and began to fill seats here in East Lansing, Michigan. That's remarkable stuff. I mean, 57K to 71,000? That's a 20-plus thousand attendance growth. Absolutely amazing. And also, you know, that 1970s Big Ten Championship that he also brought to Michigan State, you know, that
imaginative offense was at its best back in 1978 when the Spartans actually finished 8-3, defeated that school down the road, U of M, that year, 25-14, the final in that game, and tied U of M for the Big Ten championship. So can you imagine that? And I think riots may ensue if Michigan State and Michigan actually tie for the Big Ten championship today. Right?
Yeah, that would be something out of a movie that I don't think Michigan State fans would be able to deal with. I think Cedar Village would actually burn down at that point.
Very, very true. There's not room enough for these two schools to have immense success to that level without a doubt. There can only be one, right? But that 78 team was so intriguing because, you know, I talk about that pass happy offense. I mean, that was Eddie Smith to Kirk Gibson back in the day. And, you know, I heard Gibby, and I tried to get Kirk Gibson on today's show. Schedules didn't work out, though, so I'm still working on that. We're hoping to get Gibby on the show to talk about the impact that Daryl Rogers had on his life. But Eddie Smith to Kirk Gibson, that was a call that you heard many times back in the late 70s when Daryl Rogers was at the helm. But he was also, he was very colorful as well. You know, I was also doing some research here, Ian, and I found that, you know, Daryl Rogers, first off, and this is something that I don't think any college football program to this day does. Now, I will say college basketball, I always say we're so privileged here in East Lansing as reporters to cover Tom Izzo because Tom Izzo would let the media sit in on practices. You know, I do it all the time. It's one of my favorite parts of my job is when the Michigan State men's basketball season comes around and Tom Izzo, you know, puts out his practice schedule and he allows us media members. Now, when we're there, we can't tweet. We can't, you know, take any pictures, no videos. Heck, I don't even know if I'm supposed to be talking about it right now, but I'm just letting you guys know. I mean, Tom Izzo will open up his practices. We get a chance to go there and see how Tom does his thing and puts together a winning, championship-winning program like the Michigan State men's basketball program certainly is. And that's what Daryl Rogers did back in the day. You know, he allowed the media to come to his practices, to sit in on his practices. Thank goodness, though, you didn't have Twitter or Facebook or Snapchat back then, so we didn't have to worry about media members maybe putting out something that, you know, shouldn't have been put out or any schemes leaking out to the public. But, you know, that's a really cool thing that you don't see today. Now, Mark D'Antonio will let us come, but we can only shoot the beginning, and in the beginning, they're just kind of going through drills. You're not seeing any plays or schemes drawn up, that kind of thing. But still, Mark, we appreciate that. I'm not saying we don't appreciate that. I'm just saying back in the day, it was a different feel when Daryl Rogers was very open. And he was very also open and you know, not biting his tongue in press conferences. In many ways, Daryl Rogers reminded me of Tom Izzo. Because during his press conferences, he was not afraid to criticize his players. Heck, he was not afraid to criticize other coaches in the Big Ten. I mean, and there's countless sound bites. You know, one of my favorite sound bites that I heard from Daryl Rogers in prepping actually this morning came from a press conference when he was the Detroit Lions head coach, and he made the famous statement, you know, what's a guy got to do to get fired around here, you know? So Daryl Rogers.
And then he found out.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, everybody gets fired, though, when you're coaching the Detroit Lions. My gosh, that franchise. Don't even get me started on that soapbox, Ian. But bottom line, though, from all accounts that I have read discussing the legacy of Daryl Rogers, this guy was down to earth. He was a hard worker. He's a coach who, you know, inspired his teammates and also, I should say, his players, and also held them accountable and held those around him accountable. And he made, you know, in his stint, you know, here in the state of Michigan as a head coach, he made a great impact. He made a great impact. And, you know, I saw many responses from those that cover Daryl, media members, and again, teammates out there like Kirk Gibson, who talked to a few media outlets yesterday. They really are going to miss him. So, again, the passing of Daryl Rogers, he was 83 years old. And a cause of death was not immediately available, and his family is expected to release a statement sometime today. And that was told by his granddaughter, Samantha Dawson. That's what she told the Free Press. So a statement will be released at some point today, and funeral arrangements are pending. And right now, again, we're asking you all to call in those who may have known Daryl Rogers or have thoughts on his Michigan State teams from the 70s, have thoughts on, you know, his coaching stint with the Detroit Lions. Just call up if you have any thoughts or memories. 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527. Right now, I want to go to line one. We have Carol, who is on line one and would like to speak on Daryl Rogers. Carol, thank you so much for your time. You are on Current Sports.
Hi.
Hi, Carol.
Hi. I'm in my car, so I hope it's okay. I just wanted to say that when we moved to Michigan from Illinois 40 years ago now in August, the Rogers family were our neighbors. And as the moving van pulled into our driveway, their daughter Keely came down and started telling movers where to put the furniture. And that's how we met the Rogers family. And I just want to say that aside from the football, you know, which you did just address because I've been listening, he was a wonderful, compassionate man and a real inspiration for goodness for my children and our family. And my son, who used to go to all the football practices, because Daryl let him come, and they called him Wings because he would ride over on his bicycle with his hat with wings in it. And he just took this little boy in and embraced him. And they made us part of their family. And as a family, they were just, they are a beautiful, wonderful, kind, caring family. And that's aside from all the football. It just, they're wonderful, wonderful people. And I wanted to share that.
Carol, thank you so much. Yeah, that's what I've been reading, you know, online, you know, since yesterday upon learning the news. I mean, it seems like Daryl Rogers was a complete class act, down to earth, very compassionate individual. I've been reading that since yesterday.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, I saw a tribute that my son put on Facebook today, and I don't know if Marcia will ever see it, but, you know, dear Aunt Marcia, Stacy and Jamie, I mean, it just, they were just wonderful. We have loving memories of them.
Well, I tell you what, Carol, I'm sure many of our listeners, including myself, really appreciate that tribute to Daryl Rogers. Thank you so much for calling in and listening. We appreciate it.
Oh, thank you for listening. I needed to tell somebody that today.
Definitely. Bye-bye. All right. Thank you, Carol. Again, if you have a thought, a memory that you would like to share about the late, great Daryl Rogers, former Michigan State football coach who led the Spartans to the 1978 Big Ten Championship. He had a coaching stint as a head man in charge of the Detroit Lions. Call in 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527. Let's go to line two right now. We've got Kurt that wants to weigh in. Kurt, welcome to WKAR's Current Sports.
Hey, Al, how are you?
I'm doing well, my man.
Hey, I was saddened to hear about the death of Daryl Rogers. I was a freshman on campus his first year, also was Judd's first year at MSU, so I got to experience those two gentlemen as a student. And while I could say plenty about the football and the things he brought to the game and to the Big Ten, especially during the Eddie Smith, Kirk Gibson, Eugene Bird, Mark Bramer years, one of the stories I remember was that I think it was in 77, maybe the fall of 77, There was a young man on campus, and when I say a young man, he was one of these academic prodigies. He was like 12 years old and living in Holmes Hall as a freshman.
Whoa.
And Daryl brought him on as a team manager. He was on the sidelines and at all the practices, and I'm not sure a lot of coaches would want to be dealing with that kind of potential sideshow or distraction, but he embraced it and brought him on as a manager. And I remember reading, I think it was an article in the State News, where the mom was just talking about how wonderful that had been for him in terms of allowing this 12-year-old kid to be acclimated to the campus and be part of something as large as the football team.
That is a very cool story, Kirk. And you know what? So when Daryl was hired his first year, you said you were a freshman here at Michigan State, right?
I was, yes.
So I have to ask, because I know, you know, in the late 70s, I mean, 1979, we saw Magic Johnson and Greg Kelcer, you know, win a national championship under the leadership of Judd Heathcote. Then you have, you know, Daryl Rogers coaching Michigan State football. And I mentioned the attendance raise at Spartan Stadium. You know, before Rogers came, it was 57,000. In 1978, it had rose to over 71,000. As a freshman, as a student here at MSU during that time, what was that like?
Well, you know, his first year when no one really knew a whole lot about him, and they struggled a little bit that first year.
Mm-hmm.
You could go up as a student and get a ticket and sit anywhere you wanted to in Spartan Stadium. And then his second year, they went 7-3-1. And quite frankly, if it wasn't for that one tie, they would have won a share of the Big Ten title that year.
Right.
And then the following year when they won the Big Ten title, it was just amazing. You'd get your student ticket, you get in, and you'd have to, you know, that was back in the day when they were shoehorning you in as tight as possible. And there was quite a buzz. That year in 78 when they won the Big Ten title in football, people don't realize that was the last time in Big Ten history that a school won the Big Ten title in football, basketball, and baseball.
Wow, was it, man?
It was a heck of a triple threat kind of thing. and the other part about it is the football was so much fun. Mm-hmm. I mean, I guess it's always easy to say it was fun when you're winning. They're throwing the ball all over the place. It wasn't the 3 yards in a cloud of dust stuff. They were throwing it all over, and they had the talent to do that kind of stuff. You know, Gibson was, to me, the first of the mismatch wide receivers. He wasn't just big. He was unbelievably fast.
Mm-hmm.
And Eugene Bird was an excellent receiver. Bramer was an excellent tight end. You know, there are all these different things. And Eddie Smith, even though he was small, could put the ball, had a strong arm and a very accurate arm.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, everything ran like clockwork. And the weird thing was, is Daryl's last year at Michigan State, I'm pretty sure it was against Minnesota.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't have a great team that year. They had quarterback injury issues and different things.
Yeah.
But his last year at Michigan State, in the game against Minnesota, they beat Minnesota pretty handily and had absolutely 0 yards passing that game. I think they ran it for something like 350 yards, and they had one of their running backs return a kickoff for a touchdown, and they beat Minnesota pretty handily without a single passing yard.
Well, that's ironic, right?
Yeah, that was crazy.
Yeah.
But all
right.
Yeah, it was a fun time on campus at that time.
Well, I can only imagine, Kirk. I tell you what, you know, we talk every Thursday about having a current sports time machine. I really wish we had one right now to see what one of those games were like. Thank you for sharing those memories with us, Kirk. We really appreciate it.
All right, take care, Al.
You got it, man. All right, let's hit our first break. Again, if you want to continue to, just like Kirk and Carol just did, continue to share your thoughts and memories on the late, great Daryl Rogers. Again, please call in 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527. In the meantime, we'll hit our first break, and when we come back, we will have a discussion on the college football playoff format. Again, an old hat discussion, right? Should it be changed? We'll talk about that and so much more. You are listening to WKAR's Current Sports.
All right, all right, all right. Welcome back to WKAR's Current Sports. We roll into segment B. We just spent about 20 minutes discussing the passing of former Michigan State football coach and former head coach of the Detroit Lions as well. Daryl Rogers, who coached the Michigan State football team from 1976 to 79. He died this week at the age of 83. Many former players weighing in on social media. Head coach Mark D'Antonio released a statement. Martha Firestone Ford, owner of the Detroit Lions, released a statement yesterday as well. And we just had two callers actually share some memories of Daryl Rogers. Kurt, who was actually a freshman on campus during Daryl Rogers' first year at the helm of MSU football, and prior to Kurt calling in, we had Carol call in, who actually was neighbors with Rogers and his family. And again, Rogers is survived by his wife, Marsha, and daughters, Stacy and Jamie. If you have any thoughts on Daryl Rogers, maybe your time here in East Lansing watching his incredibly entertaining Michigan State football teams of the late 70s, 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527 is the number to call. All right, while you're blowing up our phone lines, let's get to a conversation that we actually meant to have, Ian, I believe like on Tuesday?
Yeah, something like that. It's been a while coming.
It's been a long time coming, man, because I know, and it was sparked because I know you came in Studio West after, I believe it was Monday's show, and said, Al, man, you know, we just had an intense conversation. I'm sitting there saying, what? About what? What's going on, man? And you were saying, oh, well, we were just debating about the college football playoff format. And in my mind, I'm saying, all right, this is a debate that we've had a long time since it's been implemented, you know, these past few seasons now. And, you know, we've had some different takes when it comes to the current sports crew. And before we dive into your take, Ian, I want to welcome to the show. Well, you heard Connor Mathis during our current sports quick hit headliners. He brings our World Cup update every single day here on the show. So, Connor, first off, welcome to the studio, my man.
Good to be back in here again.
Definitely, right? And you can see Connor's smiling face if you're tuned in via Facebook.com/WKAR News on our live stream. And sitting next to Connor, for those watching on live stream, to your far left on your screen is Jack Kerwin, who is also a fantastic current sports PA. Jack, how you doing, my man? You good?
Good to see you. Good to see you. You look great today.
Hey, you do too. Always, always, man. Appreciate that, Jack. All right, so let's dive right into it. The college football playoff format. Ian, I mean, this is an old hat conversation. You know, many people are looking at the college football playoff. And first off, I have to say this because I argued last season that maybe we should, those who say they should expand it, maybe we should take a closer look at what is happening right now when it comes to just the overall fandom of college football. Four teams is so exclusive. And this is what I argued last year. Four teams, keeping it at four teams, is so exclusive. And people begin, when do they start releasing? Like, you know, they start having the preview shows as to who's the top four. I think it's like near week six, right? They start having those shows, and you see the guys like, you know, Kirk Herbstreit come on the air, and he'll break it down. You know, just that entire crew. I believe Reese Davis, mm-hmm. I think he's a part of it as well. All those guys, they do a fantastic job, too. It's just so entertaining watching those guys go at it. But then you have this, when you started at week six, you have this big debate going around college football. You know, are those four teams that they put in from the committee the right teams or not? And it just adds to the fandom, if you ask me. And the ratings for those college football playoff preview shows are through the roof. And every week you have fans biting their nails because they know that if they lose, this is the week that their team could be out of the conversation, or the opposite argument, where if they win, maybe their team deserves a top four spot. There is such an exclusivity that comes with just four that I began rethinking it and saying, this works. You know, this works. This isn't hurting college football in any way. So I say that to say this, though. From a fairness perspective, I don't think you can have four. No. If you want to be fair, you got to expand it, in my opinion. However, keeping it at four, man, the ratings argue otherwise, dude. So, Ian, where do you fall in this conversation?
So I am on the side of expansion. I agree with you that the college football playoff has indeed helped the game. I mean, before that, it was basically whoever was 1 and 2, you got into the national championship game, and that was it. Mm-hmm. I mean, there was no committee. There was no voting. It was basically just the AP poll, and that was it. So I think that the college football playoff has worked well for the game. I agree that fan attendance is up. Viewership is up. It's definitely made a lot of money for the NCAA over the past 3 years. But I just think that right now with the four teams, well, first of all, you automatically have at least one Power Five conference excluded mm-hmm. by having only a four-team playoff. Right. Mm-hmm. And then we have the conversation that we've had the past few years with teams like Alabama and Ohio State. If they're close, but we've already got another SEC team in there, or we've already got another Big Ten team in there, should we throw another one into the mix just to spice things up? So now we have not only a Power Five conference winner being excluded, but we potentially have two Power Five conference winners being excluded in place of another SEC team or another Big Ten team. Those are the only ones that have come up so far in the conversation to be put in over a conference winner.
Okay.
So just on that basis, I think they should expand it, because if the Power Five conferences really mean anything, then why are we automatically excluding one of them every year from our playoff?
An argument when it comes to, conference championship games. I mean, in other conferences, I guess they don't matter then if you're going to put two teams in from the same conference, too.
Exactly.
Right? That's another
yeah.
argument as well.
I mean, why should the Pac-12 even have a championship game if they're going to get excluded every year, And that's the one conference that I can point to, because they haven't, other than Washington, I believe, 1 year, they haven't had that many representatives in the playoff as a whole. And then there's also the conversation with teams like UCF, who are non-Power 5 conference teams, but who have made waves in college football by either going undefeated or pulling upsets on, Power Five conference teams. If we stay at the current system right now, there's no chance that any of those teams ever get into the college football playoff.
So you would like to see a UCF?
I would love to see a UCF. Because if that team goes 15-0 or 14-0 or whatever it is at that point before the bowl games are selected, why should we not give them the opportunity to showcase their talents and see if they really are one of those elite teams in college football? I mean, UCF can hang championship mm-hmm. banners for an undefeated season all day long, but they didn't play in the championship, and they never had a shot to play in the championship, even from the beginning of the season.
I think the majority of college football fans fall on your side of this argument, Ian. So
I think it should be an 8-team playoff at the very most. I mean, at a certain point, if you start adding too many games, then it becomes the conversation of, is this, an NFL-length season? Should we start paying these players more? So I think 8 teams is where it needs to stay right now. But I think it would do a lot for, including all the Power Five conference winners. So we never have to have the conversation again about should we put somebody in over a Power Five winner?
Okay.
And then teams like UCF would have a shot at getting in.
Connor.
I agree with that. One of my biggest problems with college football, like their postseason, was that I feel like there's never upsets in NFL, in college basketball, and all the other things. There's an upset factor, because there's always going to be
So you like the parody?
Yeah, I want a surprise every now and then. Because if you always have the top four, they're going to be the best teams going to be playing. I agree with Ian. Like, you should have the Power Five winners and then three quote unquote wild card slots.
Right.
Because then you could have maybe someone finished second in the conference, or maybe, like Ian said, maybe there's a group five that just blew people away that year. Even Western Michigan a couple years ago with Fleck, where it was, that team looks pretty good. I wonder what would happen if we put them against someone else. And granted, most of the time you're not going to have a big Appalachian State beats Michigan kind of upset. Most of the time, the bigger team will handle business. But every so often, you're going to have an upset, which I think will make it more interesting. Even in the NFL, there's a lot of teams that come in that wild card spot where you're thinking, they're gonna get killed, and then they come in, they show up, and they beat it. The best example of the NFL is the Seahawks a couple years back beating the Saints. They didn't have a chance in that game. They still were able to show up, and it's one of the best playoff moments we've ever seen in football in general.
That's true. All right. Well, I want to now save the last take here for the man
lone dissenter
who says, the heck with all of that. I have a different take. They should keep it the way it is, that being Jack. Jack, why is the current playoff format a good one in your estimation?
Well, so a couple of things. I guess first touching on why I would be against expanding to eight teams. I think a lot of the arguments that get made for expanding to eight teams stem from, you know, last season seeing a team like Ohio State get left out over Alabama. But the argument I would make is, even though the difference between Team 4 and Team 5 may not be very substantial, I would argue the difference between allowing Teams 6 through 8 in a given year in most years would be a much greater drop-off in talent and overall quality of the team. But when you look
so
at
the
difference,
there's a big drop-off from the top 4 or 5 in comparison to the rest of that top 10 ranking?
Yes, in a lot of cases, yes. And the other point I would make, I don't think in a given year there are eight teams that are worthy of going to the college football playoff. I think we've had four so far. We've had 4 years of the playoff, right? I believe
three or four.
I think this will be our fourth one.
This will be the fourth one.
But my point is, I can reference every single year there's been a blowout in one of the semifinal games, and these are just the top four teams.
Michigan State and Alabama, right?
Exactly. Debatably, they're the top four teams.
What?
They're the top four teams according to a committee.
Yeah.
Debatably, they're the top four.
Sure, but have you not agreed, Ian, with the top four that they've had in the 3 years that we've had the playoffs so far?
Well, I'm just saying, if you can only include four spots, then you have to deem that as your quote-unquote top four for that year, but are those necessarily the best four teams? I mean, if we had an eight-team playoff, we'd be able to find out.
I got to step in here.
Go ahead, Jack.
No, because here's the thing. Because if you expand to eight teams, then the discussion between 4 and 5 is just going to shift to the discussion between team 8 and team 9.
But the team 8 and team 9 drop off is going to be a lot more drastic than the team 4 and team 5 drop off.
No, I disagree. I disagree. You're making the argument that there are going to be eight teams in a given year that are worthy, and then team 8 and team 9, there will be a substantial difference. Disagree.
I think that, you know, you talk about the drop off between, you know, you said the top 4 or 5 teams compared to the rest. I don't think the drop off is that glaring.
Jack. Well, here's the thing. I
think that, you know, if you look at some of these teams who are ranked just outside of the top four, you could make the argument they did deserve to be possibly in that number of the top four teams.
Well,
but
okay.
When talking about expansion, the big thing with me is, and I kind of fall with you on this, Ian. I mean, you know, once divisions are you know, cut and a clear champion is crowned in every Power 5 conference championship game, if you don't put those teams in the college football playoff, you're basically saying that the conference championship doesn't mean anything. And I'm against that. I think that if you win your conference championship, that should mean something. And you should be given a chance to at least compete for a national championship. And I have a problem with that.
And then also, because the playoff rankings, too, is a big thing. It's like, oh, one of our criteria is conference championship, except for when it doesn't matter, when a circumstance that came out like this year or last year or you know, things like that, where conference championship mattered when the Big 12 wasn't getting in, but now this year comes around, conference championship doesn't matter. So it shifts year to year.
Right.
I think a lot of the other, to address 2 points, I think one of the other problems with it is a lot of times the seeding from one tour gets a little more political rather than actual rankings. Like, people want to see Bama versus Clemson again. Yeah. So we're going to move Bama down. Or like when it was us versus Bama, we were 4, we were 5. And then all of a sudden we leapfrog up till we have to take on Bama instead of taking on someone else. I think
there's also
a little bit of politics being played. Like, oh, are we going to get more Alabama fans in Texas than if we put them out in, Florida or whatever it might be. And then the other thing too, like the discrepancy between like, 1 and 8, like the counting gap. In all playoffs, that happens. There's in every other major sport that happens.
That's what makes March Madness beautiful, right?
Exactly.
You know,
the difference between the Golden State Warriors at number one in the West and the 8 seed team that they're going to inevitably beat the crap out of is ridiculous. But the 8 seed team still has a chance to go and say, hey, maybe we can steal a game or like things like that.
Intrigue. Now, if you do this, if you expand it, I think we're all in agreement that you also have to cut at least a game or two off the regular season because these college kids can't. I mean, that's a lot of games to be played, right?
I agree.
You have to shorten. That's the big argument when having this discussion about expansion as well, which is why I think it's been tied up. I think that the committee is leaning toward expanding, but again, from a schedule logistical standpoint, that is also a conversation that has to be had. Also, I want to make this known. Why in the heck do they split up, you know, these divisions in every conference? The legends and leaders. I hate that.
Why don't we just have, you know, go old school. Just have one conference, because then
Big 12 style.
Right, exactly. Mm-hmm. Because then if you just have all these teams, you know, like the Big Ten, for instance, you know, if you get rid of the legends and leaders, you don't have this big debate when it comes to the two teams that play in the college football playoff, you know, between a Wisconsin or Ohio State, for instance, right? When you're sitting there saying, well, Wisconsin lost, but they did so well in their division, mm-hmm. they still are in the argument. No, screw that. Throw it out the window. Let's have them play straight up in one division with no separation between and no split up between the teams. I've never understood that. I'm not a big fan of the whole, you know, split up, like, you know, the legends and leaders. I'm not a big fan of that at all. So
yeah, that just seems like it takes away because like, you know, if you have it as one conference, then you're rewarding the team that goes out of its way every so often to go out and schedule. And the other thing too is that there's teams like Notre Dame, which under the current playoff format, Notre Dame is not going to get into a playoff unless they go undefeated, and they go undefeated with the toughest schedule known to mankind.
Right, exactly. It's not fair for Notre Dame.
They need to join a conference. They have to join a conference.
That's my big argument when it comes to Notre Dame. That's my big gripe. When it comes to Notre Dame, I think that's everybody's gripe.
I completely agree. They do need to join a conference, but I'm saying, like, for a perspective for, like, people, for fans of, like, Notre Dame or fans of schools that, you know, the conference might have a down year, might not be a best year. Like, they, like, you should.
But I think it helps them not being in a conference. If they have success in the conference, Notre Dame.
They do. They have the name. But, like, this year is a perfect example. They had a pretty good year. They had a good bounce back from their terrible year last year, mm-hmm. but they lost their one game, and immediately after they lost that one game, I didn't see him in a playoff projection ever again.
It's an interesting debate. So Jack, you're sticking with your guns. You don't think it should expand?
No, absolutely. I mean,
keep it the way it is. You're fine with it.
Well, certainly, because, well, one more point I want to make. So
We got one minute.
Yeah, I see that. You know, I just pulled up the AP poll from last year. So teams 6-8 last season, you had Wisconsin, who played in the pillow Big Ten West. You had Auburn, who lost 3 games. And you had USC from the Pac-12, who had 2 losses, and that's a bubble wrap conference. They don't really play defense in the Pac-12. So the argument I'm making is that, you know, if you expand it to 8 teams, and this isn't to say this would necessarily be the playoff, because you know, it's a different committee that makes that ruling. But the point is, I feel like there's an incentive then to be in a crappier division or a crappier conference if you expand to 8 teams, just because you might win your division or win your conference, which is tougher than, you know, the Big Ten East, for example. I don't think the best 8 teams would necessarily get in.
Okay. I wish I had just 2 more minutes, Lord. We'll continue this. We'll put a wrap on this on tomorrow's show. Great stuff by the entire current sports crew. Until then, we are on a 23-hour break. Be easy, people.